This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Recently in Prince George Clearly Today, the scourge of the tent caterpillar has been spotted. To address this infestation, first we must know the enemy. And helping us understand the enemy here today is the University of Northern British Columbia's arthropod expert from the Faculty of Environment. That's Dr. Dezeen Huber, entomologist. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi there. Really good to meet you. I'm really happy to be here to talk about our friends, and some people might say enemies, the forest tent caterpillars.
Yes, in all seriousness, caterpillars are not the enemy. They're a part of our integral environment.
I'll also mention here that the forest tent caterpillar is also known as Tangu Dagai in the Clearly Today Dekef dialect, which roughly translates to hairy leaf bug. And there's actually a plaque explaining this on the Millennium Trail, which surrounds the bull area of Prince George Clearly Today.
And this is a species that is natural to our ecosystem. This is not an invasive insect, is that correct?
That is correct for tent caterpillars and other, there's several other species of tent caterpillars as well. They all live happily here. They've lived here long before anyone at all has been here. And we live in a forest, really, even though we don't think about it oftentimes. We might be walking around our concrete jungle and see very few trees, but we are smack dab in the middle of a forest, and so we share our environment with many forest creatures, and these are some of the fascinating ones that occasionally show up in large numbers to remind us of that fact.
All right, so the tent caterpillars that have been spotted around our town site recently, this June 2026, how do they fit into the bigger ecological picture? What's their role?
Yeah, I think everyone would be happy if there were only 10 caterpillars, but yes, there are many tent caterpillars. They have a lot of different roles. They're always here. So, I mean, we think when we see them, oh man, where did they all come from? They're always here in small numbers. Sometimes there might only be sort of 10 in a given area, but then they really ramp up quite rapidly sometimes. When they do, they eat leaves on deciduous trees. They particularly like poplar trees, but they'll eat other tree leaves as well. And so that can cause some sort of short-term damage to trees. But trees typically recover. Trees are pretty tough things. They sit there and they take, you know, quite a beating from all sorts of fungi and insects and other things that are always feeding on them because they can't move around. So they have all sorts of defenses and also ability to recover from these sorts of assaults. So we don't need to worry too much about the trees in general. If a tree gets, you know, attacked for several years in a row, it might die. But in terms of the role, things that we do know these tent caterpillars do, especially when they build up in these large numbers, is they take a lot of the tree material and they recycle it into the forest floor. So they're pooping all over the place, putting nutrients into the forest floor during a time of the year when nutrients might not normally be there. And then they also open up the canopy so more sunlight gets through. So certain plants down on sort of lower canopy plants, shrubs and herbaceous plants, might get a little bit of a boost in a few years where they get extra fertilizer during their growth stage, where they also get extra sunlight. Plus forest tent caterpillars, I mean, we generally don't eat them. If you look on the internet, there's a guy that supposedly made wine. Sometimes these are called army worms, and there's a guy that supposedly, I think he's in Minnesota, made wine out of army worms. So it's possible, but most people don't eat these things in any way, shape, or form. But birds and small rodents and other things like that will eat them in their caterpillar form and then also in their moth form later on.
Oh. Interesting. So they're not toxic, actually, in that case, I assume.
I mean, like I said, I've never tried to know, but I don't think they are toxic. They do have little tiny hairs all over their body, and those little hairs can be a little bit irritating. So some people actually react reasonably strongly to them and get rashes. The hairs will sort of break off into your skin. You don't want to get them in your eyes. Sometimes if there's a lot of caterpillars around, the hairs sort of start breaking off in general. There's a bit of this hair dust floating around too that some people get allergic to. But as far as I know, they don't have any particular toxins in their body, and a lot of things will eat them.
Lovely. Almost like a pollen season, we might get a caterpillar haircut season where their hair clippings are flying around. That's a nice thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there factors that accelerate their presence, like, you know, the amount of heat we get? We've had, it was kind of unseasonably warm for a while. Perhaps that was a factor, you know, precipitation and the presence of it or the absence of it, you know, anything like that.
There's a lot of research on this. I mean, these are widespread insects. They're across large ranges. So different outbreaks in different areas could be caused by different things. It certainly is possible that a lot of drought can weaken trees and some of their defenses, and like their chemical defenses in their leaves, they aren't able to produce as many chemical defenses, and then caterpillars do well in 1 year or the next year or whatever it happens to be, and their populations start building up. There are definitely factors we know that drive them back down once their populations get large. It's sort of like any other organism. If we, like humans, if we all crowd together in a, you know, crowded dorm, or we spend a lot of time in large numbers, we start to spread diseases among ourselves as well. And there's some diseases which will kill a lot of caterpillars. There's also parasitoids, little wasps and flies and stuff that start to build up in their population once there's a lot of food for them, being the caterpillars, and those sort of drive the numbers down again. So we get these sort of cycles across the landscape. One area might have a ton of caterpillars, an adjacent area might not have very many, and it's a little bit hard to predict. And they sort of seem to move in waves across the country a little bit too. There's some people that sort of describe it that way, some modelers as well.
So, some modelers?
Yeah, people who do mathematical modeling of ecological phenomena. So they will look at all of the different factors involved in a population, for instance, the type of predation, the longevity, the amount of food available, reproductive capacity, all of these other things. And they try to find ways of describing phenomena that they see on large landscapes, for instance, in a mathematical sense. And that can help develop hypotheses that then we can go out and test in nature. So if somebody says, hey, this mathematical model that I made to describe how caterpillars outbreak in a certain area seems to indicate that, you know, this particular parasitic fly might be important in their decline, that gives us to say, well, there's a hypothesis. We can go out then and start looking for that fly and its numbers and test various sub-hypotheses related to that.
Interesting. So there's not one critical factor that's going to send the caterpillars into the neighborhood. It's a big variety of things, and the verdict's kind of out. You know, it's a topic of discussion as to what can and does not accelerate tent caterpillars in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with you on that. Most ecological phenomena have many factors that play into whatever happens to be going on. If there was one thing that was going on, then I can guarantee by now we would have found a way to stop that one thing from happening, for instance, in a city or some other place. But it's usually a number of factors interacting with each other.
It's fairly safe to say then that there is probably at any given time somewhere in the province a boom cycle of tent caterpillars happening. Might not be in your neighborhood, but maybe way off in the northeast corner, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, you know, it could be happening. And we don't see them here for like 10 years or something, but they're active somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And these, as I said, different tent caterpillars are, different species are present all the way across Canada and parts of the U.S. as well. In any given year, there's going to be some infestation, sort of like lightning strikes, right? Like, I mean, we don't have a thunderstorm right now as you and I are talking, but somewhere in the province, some thunderstorms going on. I know for a fact right now that in parts of Alberta, I think sort of around Calgary and Airdrie area, there's a tent caterpillar infestation right now, for instance.
From my recent memory, I recall the years of 2013 and 2014 being pretty heavy into the boom cycle of the tent caterpillars. We were pretty overrun at that time. What is their typical cycle, though? Are we overdue for it right now? Or, you know, should it have taken longer? What's the outlook on frequency and length of time?
Yeah, I mean, people often say 7 years, 10 years, 12 years. There's sort of this sort of 10-ish years type of thing that they seem to cycle in. Again, it's one of these things that's pretty hard to predict. Like, we're seeing them ramp up right now, and maybe next year might be the worst year of this cycle. But if some disease happens to take hold in this population right now, this might be it this year too. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean, just because you see a lot of them now doesn't necessarily, they're sort of moving along a normal trajectory right now. So I would say, you know, next year might be a little bit worse than this year, and then they might start declining after that if we're seeing a normal trajectory around here. But you never know. They could drop off immediately now, and this might be it for the next decade. They might come back in 5 years, but sort of 10-ish years seems to be what we tend to see.
So we can't stick you with the label of sage of the caterpillars here, but there is a reasonable chance that they could actually accelerate and be much worse next year than they are this year.
Yeah, I mean...
Here locally, Prince George Clay today.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody who is around here around 2013, 2014, if you remember what it was like then, we haven't nearly gotten to that point yet. So there's room to grow, shall we say.
Gotcha. So you spoke earlier that when the numbers really get going, all kinds of factors start influencing their decline. There's like disease and other predators that come in and, you know, take advantage of their numbers, basically. I believe it's referred to as the Black Plague for caterpillars because they turn black and they kind of droop over and become lifeless little arches hanging on a tree branch. But it's called bacillus something. It's naturally occurring in the soil. And the nucleopolyhedrovirus. Can you tell us anything about that or, you know, the naturally occurring things that wipe them out in the end? What do they ultimately succumb to?
Sure. I mean, there's a bunch of things. There are some bacteria that they succumb to. There's some viruses as well that are pretty specific to tent caterpillars. There's little wasps that'll come and lay their eggs on caterpillars or on their cocoons, and then the baby wasps eat the caterpillars from the inside out. There's also flies there's a couple of different species of flies that also do the same thing. I think they lay eggs on the caterpillars and then the baby flies, the maggots, hatch out during the pupal stage, if I recall. Those flies, they look like smallish house flies. They're just the same shape, but they're reasonably, like maybe half a centimeter, three quarters of a centimeter long. And they have little sort of longitudinal, so sort of from head end to tail end, little racing stripes on their back end. So they're black with little like white stripes, like two or three white stripes on their back end. And people will call them friendly flies because their numbers start to ramp up a lot when the forest tent caterpillar numbers get to be pretty large because they're doing well as well, laying eggs on these caterpillars. And people start noticing because they like landing on you. So they'll just sit there and land on you and sort of hang out and look around. So people have called them friendly flies, often in a lot of places across North America. The other name for them is government flies, and I'm not joking. And you can look them up, friendly flies, government flies.
They're really unpopular in Alberta.
Yes, probably. Okay. Although seems we're both like expat Albertans, we can make these jokes, I guess. I think it might derive from the U.S. actually in this case, because there's sort of these conspiracy theories that when the populations of caterpillars take off, the government comes and drops these flies off. And so that's why the populations, so now you see all these like, you know, quote unquote government flies landing on everybody doing things, you know. Wow. Anyhow, you can look up government flies.
Now that's a good story.
Yeah, yeah, there we are, yeah, yeah.
Something notable to mention is that the Department of Environmental Conservation of New York State in the United States of America felt compelled to have their own specific page alongside other animals, fish, and plants in the state on their website, dec.ny.gov, for the insect known as the friendly fly, or Sarcophaga aldrichi, which states the following, quote,
"The Department of Environmental Conservation does not release these flies. Friendly flies are also called government flies because some people believe that the government released the flies to control forest tent caterpillars. This is a persistent and inaccurate rumor, as the flies are native to New York. Their populations are not usually noticed until there is a tent caterpillar outbreak. Once the population of forest tent caterpillars increases, so does the population of friendly flies. After an outbreak of the forest tent caterpillars ends, the friendly fly population also collapses. In fact, the flies are likely the main reason for the caterpillar outbreak collapse. This is a natural part of the cycle of biological activities that regularly occur in New York's forests. These flies do not have biting mouth parts and are not interested in human flesh or blood. They do, however, like to land on humans, probably seeking moisture and perhaps salt on the skin surface. They are not believed to transmit any human diseases."
End quote.
So, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, these caterpillars cause all sorts of like lore and legend and stuff because, I mean, there's like, you know, there are literally people with car accidents with slippery roads for these things. So, yeah, they've got the conspiratorial flies, you know, maybe this dude who made wine out of them. I'm not sure. There's all sorts of North America is a very diverse place. And so the people all across the continent experience these things. And so you're going to get lots of diverse myth, I guess, about them.
We all react to them differently, but most people kind of tend to feel that they're kind of yucky, but they do not seem to present any real danger, at least.
No, I'd say not. Other than that sort of that little bit of an allergic reaction that you can get. I mean, like I said, sometimes, I mean, it does get super slippery with their poop and little bodies and stuff like that. Like, you might, there's some slipping, especially when it rains. Be careful riding your bike across a lot of them. I think you can slip on that. So, I mean, there's sort of slipping hazards. And yeah, I mean, I love insects a lot, but I will agree that when, you know, there's like a billion of these things like falling out of trees, landing all over me, I'm sliding around on caterpillar poop and stuff like that. I can see why people might not appreciate it.
Yeah. It's an experience outside of the normal range of our day-to-day. It's an intrusion for sure. Is there, before I ask you about prevention, I want to ask you a bit more about the natural enemies to the tent caterpillar. I believe one being nucleopolyhedrovirus, or MPV, yes. Black Death, that caterpillars ultimately often succumb to in times of overpopulation. But I don't know if you can speak to this at all, but like a natural insecticide being made out of using MPV-infected caterpillars in a viral cocktail of sorts to manage their propagation. Have you heard of people making this? If so, how can one make that? Has this been done locally or on a large scale anywhere you're aware of?
I don't think it's easy to make these things because you have to maintain them in caterpillar populations because they're infesting caterpillars. But there are, I don't know if it's still going on, quite a few years back at University of Victoria. I don't remember if it was related to forest tent caterpillar. These NPV viruses are pretty specific. There's different viruses that are specific to different caterpillars, but these sorts of natural pesticides, BT, which is a bacteria as well, is sometimes used for some defoliating caterpillars as well. So there are these natural pesticides that are used, and as far as we know, a lot of them are quite specific to certain caterpillars. We don't necessarily know for sure that they're not going to cause diseases elsewhere. And of course, like any other pesticide that you're going to use, it does cause evolution in the target population because some things survive, and then you might end up developing resistance down the line also. So what I would say with any pesticide, whether it's something, you know, quote unquote organic, or I mean, like, please don't be spraying like toxic chemicals around for various reasons, but read the label and use the label appropriately. And I would also say with this particular infestation, I mean, this is basically like sort of a plague of biblical proportions, right? So if you spray whatever you want it to spray, like, you can wipe out your little local population, but they're just going to keep on coming in from outside. So it's pretty hard to deal with these things, even on a small scale. What I would say is if you have a small tree in your yard that you're worried about getting defoliated year after year for the next few years, you know, just spend some time each day, like use a garden hose to blow, you know, to blast the caterpillars off of there or pick them off with your hands or whatever. It takes them a while to come back. So you could control them in certain very small scale situations to make sure one tree doesn't get hammered repeatedly, but you're not going to be able to get rid of them from your yard no matter how hard you try in this situation.
Gotcha. And I'm going to imagine that the MPV, or the Black Death of caterpillars, is non-transmissible to human beings. People can't catch this disease that you are aware of, correct?
That is true. So yeah, yes, with spongy moth, which is a different creature that's been introduced in Eastern North America, and we always worry about getting into Western North America here. The Canadian Forest Service or the Provincial Forest Service will often spray a bacterial spray that kills them. The spray cannot hurt you at all. There's no way that it can hurt you. It's tuned specifically for that particular species. In that case, it's going after an invasive creature. If there was some sort of spray that was used for this creature, it would have to be across large-ish areas to have any real impact. But yes, you're right. These viruses and bacteria that are specific to insects are not going to hurt a human.
What a relief.
Yes, there we are.
You gestured to this before that we may not be in on a full infestation right now at this present time. It's possible that next year might be bigger. How did these caterpillars initially show up locally? They are a naturally occurring insect, but did they crawl their way here?
Even when we're not seeing them, they still are present in very low populations. So they're just doing their thing quietly. There's a few of them around. When the adults come out, the females will produce a pheromone to help guide the males to mate. So even if they're in very small numbers, they're still able to find each other to mate and sort of maintain a low-level population. But then whatever it is that triggers it, whether it's drought or other, just a reduction in disease or parasitoids or other things that triggers this explosion, and they cross some sort of threshold and then they explode and then we start seeing them. But it's like a lot of forest insect I mean, things that we call pests, things like the mountain pine beetle, which is also a naturally occurring organism. They're just here in low levels doing their thing. You'd have to go look hard for them to find them 9 years out of 10. But then suddenly they show up and everyone's like, where do these come from? Well, they were here. They haven't left.
For people who might be worried about this happening in their backyard, is there anything they can do to prevent this from happening next year? Let's see, their cycle, as I understand it, tends to expire around mid-June. You know, that you get your initial foliage, the caterpillars eat that foliage, they go quiet, and they turn into moths, they fly away, they fly around, they lay their eggs, and then they come back next year. So what could you do in preparation for infestation next year if you have a particularly beloved plant that you don't want invaded?
Right. First, if you see them feeding on things this year, those are the trees they'll feed on next year again. Some people will put bands of like saran wrap with some Vaseline on them. That could keep them down a little bit because they can't climb up as well. But the reality too is like eggs will be laid in on the trees quite high up as it is. So they're just going to hatch out on their food source as well. There's really not a ton you can do feasibly to cut the population down. Work on keeping your trees healthy, make sure they're watered well and fertilized. If it's a really small tree, you might not want it to get hit multiple years in a row. So like I said, you can get out there yourself and remove the caterpillars physically from the tree and just check it every day for a few weeks until the caterpillars are gone. So, you know, maintain tree health. Most trees are able to resiliently survive this thing and come back. If it happens for 3, 4, 5 years in a row, then you start to see a fair amount of tree mortality, but most of these outbreaks really only last in any area for a couple of years or so, and trees mostly are able to just come back from that. In fact, the trees you see defoliated this June here in Prince George, a lot of them are going to put out a little second crop of leaves in about, you know, a few weeks from now, and they'll just continue their summer photosynthesis for a few more weeks here until we unfortunately get to, you know, September or October and things start falling off.
As we may be subjected to walking through a cloud of hanging arthropods, as you know, they're crawling through our hair and so on, do you have any particular perspective on how to empathize with this critter? Is there anything that makes it okay for you when you're dealing with them? Could you put yourselves in the tiny little many, many shoes of the caterpillar?
That's right. As a biologist and a ecologist and a conservationist, I feel that like every plant and every animal is intrinsically valuable. It's doing its little thing. These caterpillars are just doing their little caterpillar thing. And, you know, if you really think about it, it's a pretty fast, I mean, I understand no one likes them crawling in their hair and you sliding on their caterpillar poop and stuff, but if you can sort of shift your perspective a bit and look at this sort of amazing phenomenon that we're seeing here as well, just vast numbers of insects crawling all over the place, doing all sorts of things, learn a little bit about their mating habits, about their natural enemies. It's a really cool little ecosystem that they sort of create every decade or so with their activity. They're doing interesting, good things for the forest as well. They're just being caterpillars, just like you and I are being people. And, you know, we sort of hope that we all are respected as people. Just respect the caterpillars for their caterpillarness.
You got to think about the particular wasps and birds out there that are just having a party.
That too. You know, those little flies, little wasps, little birds, it's little mice probably. This is a good time for them. And the plants that are getting extra sunlight too. Think about that.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. And now it's time for opinion. I was going to say, one way that the caterpillars spread down is they climb onto public transit and get a free ride somewhere. In your opinion, should they be paying a transit fare?
Yes, indeed. No, unless they're, what, under 16, which I guess most of them are. So maybe they're free. They're free.
Yeah. They have a natural exemption. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Okay, well, that point is moot. I won't be bringing it up at the next city council meeting. All right.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for your helpful facts about these arthropods.
The forest tent caterpillar,
which happens to be in our town this summer 2026 and maybe 2027.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.